Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robin Hood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
The summer Berkshire theater season is formally over, but the three major theaters each have a fall production, and the Berkshire Theater Group is presenting What the Jews Believe. And with me today, I'm happy to have as my guest Mark Harlech, who is both the playwright and director. This play follows up on Mark's hugely successful The Immigrant, a play based on growing up in the only Jewish family in a small town in central Texas. Mark also co-wrote Hank Williams' Lost Highway, a bio-musical about the country western singer, and has acted in many productions on Broadway, including the recent revival of The Normal Heart, and in regional theaters across the country. And if you're not into theater and you're a television junkie, you will know Mark Harlech as Dr. Eric Gabelhauser on the hit sitcom Big Bang Theory. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
Do you get bothered or tired of people when you're at an airport or you're at a restaurant and somebody looks at you and says, I know you from someplace, and you know that they're thinking of Big Bang
usually,
Theory?
Usually, are you a dad in my son's Boy Scout troop? Don't I know you from Dr. Haraway's office? Where have I seen you before? And then if I because I'm that guy on right. TV, right. I'm that guy. I've been in 10 million different episodes of everything, from soup to nuts. And, usually they'll say, I'll finally confess, I'm an actor. You've probably seen my name. What have I seen you in? Maybe you saw me in this. No. Well, maybe you saw me in that. No, keep going. And then I have to recite my entire resume. So I usually just lie and say I'm a biology teacher from the University of Texas.
Or you sort of look like a dentist, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, you could be a dentist.
I was confused for somebody's psychiatrist one time on the Upper West Side. She passed by me on the escalator. I was going down. She was going up into the subway. And she said, Dr. Caraway. I said, what? You're Dr. Caraway. I'm sorry, I'm not Dr. Caraway. So I went back home and I told my wife, somebody thought I was a Dr. Caraway. We Googled it, and there was a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Caraway, and he looked just like me.
Well, you're an actor and a playwright and a director, and that's pretty close to being a psychiatrist, so can we talk about that?
I played one on TV. I played one on TV. Surgeon, hand me the knife. I'll give it a try.
Okay, so let's hand you the script. All right, let's hand you the script. And the script is What the Jews Believe. Now, people just think that titles come out of anywhere or everywhere, but you know, playwrights really do entitle their plays, you know, with a certain reason that they want to telegraph something about what it's about. So What the Jews Believe is a pretty declarative title. What do you...
Well, it's a declaration. It's also a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's wondering. It's asking. It's wanting to know. There's no punctuation at the end of it. I grew up in a very rural, almost village in central Texas, and ours was the only Jewish family in town. And so my life was not, we were Jewish, sort of, inside the house, but we lived a largely secular life, and outside the house I was just I've lost my accent over the years, but I was just a regular Texas kid, running around, buzz cut kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
I remember many times saying, like, so what is it? What is it that Jews believe about bacon? I knew that there was something about pork. You know, or what is it? What do the Jews believe in heaven? What do the Jews believe? Or I'd come back after, you know, they my part of the country was a deeply fundamentalist Bible Belt region, and I would come in, and I remember being a little kid saying, so what is it that we Jews believe about Jesus? What do we believe about? And I was always asking this question about what do we believe? Well, so in later years, once I became philosophical, I guess you could say, I thought it was very interesting that a person has to ask, what is it we believe? Because aren't there some intrinsic things that we know, as opposed to things that we believe? Like, for instance, I knew what the Ten Commandments were. So, don't murder. That seems like you don't have to be told to believe not to murder. Don't steal. You don't have to be told to steal. Honor your father and mother. I got that every day. So I, at least I knew that was an accepted mode of behavior. But the more I learned about just what all of the, especially when you live in a fundamentalist part of the country, and now not even so much, you encounter it everywhere, especially in the Jewish community. There is a very complex network of, I guess we call it dogma, but basically it is what we believe about certain things, what Christians believe about the second coming, about the messianic posture of Israel. The notion that we have to be told by some authority or by some group that we belong to what it is that we believe doesn't always comport with what one's instincts are on the inside, you know, like your basic moral structure of being a good person.
Right.
So, hence the title.
Okay.
Because there are times in the play where the characters sort of have to confront this idea of religious belief and going beyond our day-to-day lives and involving crucial matters such as there's a family at the center of this play that's Jewish, but they live in a remote region. It's all autobiographical sources that I draw from my own life. When it comes time for the kid's bar mitzvah, you know, basically like every bar mitzvah boy from coast to coast, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to learn all the Hebrew? Why do I have to go through all of this stuff? What's up with that? I mean, I know there's...
And you went through it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know there's going to be, especially these days, there's going to be a very high-end party at the end of it and lots of gifts. But why do I have to do this? And when you come down to the rock bottom of it, it's a difficult thing to answer. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the answer is because that's the way we do it. Right. That's who we are. That's what defines us. But does that mean that's what how a person is defined on the inside? So these ideas come into conflict in the play.
In case you're just joining us, the program is Off Script, and my guest today is Mark Hollick, who is the playwright and director, and also an actor, but not for this production, of What the Jews Believe, which is going to be at the Unicorn at the Berkshire Theatre Group from September 26th through October 20th. What the Jews Believe a rewriting of the play, the legacy that followed up on The Immigrant?
It's a retitling and a rewriting. The play is 20 years old. First produced in San Diego, California, And the original title was What the Jews Believe, and it was produced at a very small theater. The producer was nervous about attracting an audience, and he thought that the title, What the Jews Believe, was repellent, found it personally alarming.
And he's in the theater?
Yeah,
this is a person in the theater?
Yeah. Well,
what's he doing in the theater?
He wanted an audience. He knew since the central characters are Jewish that it would probably attract a Jewish audience, and he didn't want to keep them away with this notion of, I don't know, he just found something incendiary about it. Because I wanted a production of it, and it was a very small theater, I chose this alternate title, The Legacy, which I have to admit is not a bad title for the play, because it's also what the play is about. There is a legacy of what one generation passes to the other generation. But coming here to BTG gave me an opportunity to return to my original title, because I think it is kind of provoking. I think that it's sort of like, come here and see what we have to have to say, if you dare.
Okay. Who's the central character besides you?
Well, I'm not the central character. I do appear in it as the bar mitzvah boy, but there were two events that happened in my life. One was that happened in close proximity to each other. One was the loss of my mother mm-hmm. to a fatal disease, and the other one was my bar mitzvah. And in between the two of those was my dad. And the amazing thing was that he survived. Not physically, but that he somehow got through it all. He dealt with the loss of his young wife. She was in her middle 30s.
And you were 12?
And I was, yeah. And I was, for all the usual reasons, I was doing my bar mitzvah lessons, but we really didn't live in a Jewish community. So I was more or less doing it by myself with some written material.
Let me interrupt. Are you an only child?
No. I have a brother and sister, which have been judiciously excised from the play, which is why the play is fictional. I've changed the names and I've changed some of the locations, so I didn't have to drag them into this morass. But my dad somehow shepherded me through my bar mitzvah and gave me a reason to do it, and cared for my mother during this very difficult time, and during the end of her life, and a really difficult time in his life, since remarried and has passed away, and my stepmother is now in her 90s, and she's been my stepmother longer than my mother was my mother. But he was a very mild, friendly, amiable, positive, lighthearted, cheerful, innocent man. And I admired the hell out of him. Mm. And I just wondered, how did he navigate this time in his life? So I wrote the play as an investigation of how did he get through it? What did it require? And once I started digging into that, I found that what I was investigating was not so much my father's character as the very nature of belief. The very nature of belief. Like, what is belief actually? Is it something that's concrete? Is it a basic truth that transcends religion, tribes, groups, communities? What is it? And Even more challenging, is it necessary? So this all refers to this title, the question, mm-hmm. the statement that the title presents. What do the Jews believe? You can fill in the blank. What do the Buddhists believe? What do the Christians believe?
What do Catholics believe?
Yes.
Let's hear it for the Catholics.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's, yes, I relate the most to the Catholics in terms of the just the particulars of daily, weekly observances.
Mm-hmm.
I think the you know, we Jews, I don't know what the actual count is for Catholics, but for Jews, you know, the five books of Moses call upon us to observe. I think the count is 613 instructions, laws, commandments, whatever you want to call them. 613 observances that we maintain. Which is a pretty high number. And most people, so the Catholics are, you know, the Catholics are up there.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to know what the number count is of observances. I bet it's in the hundreds. But you know, let's ask ourselves, how many of these observances do we actually adhere to? And if we don't adhere to them, then by what judgment do we decide not to adhere to them? And then what does that say about the nature and quality of your belief?
Mm-hmm.
And once you begin taking all of that away, my question might be at the end, and this is what I'd like the audience to be arguing about during intermission and as they go out to the parking lot, is belief necessary? And if belief is not necessary, then what is there that keeps us going through hard times?
Well, you haven't used the term. We've talked about belief. You've talked about commitments. You've talked about, you know, rituals. But you haven't used the term morality yet. If you don't have belief, do you think you can have morality?
Well, that's a question.
Yeah.
That's a question. I don't want to answer it here, and I don't want to answer it in.
But
in,
it's in one that I think that hearing you talk about your play, I think it's one that your play will bring.
There's in the previous installment of this family story, The Immigrant.
Right.
We have this. This stern, coarse, rock-faced town banker. And he happens to be a very profane man. He just says goddamn a lot and a bunch of other mild profanities. One of my Orthodox Jewish relatives came to see the play, and he was just in pain at the end of it that he had to sit through and listen to all of these profanities. And he asked me, why does the banker in your play have to curse so much? And so the question I put to him, is it possible that a profane man can also be a good man?
Sure.
So this is a matter of morality,
mm-hmm.
is it not?
Yeah.
So my Orthodox relative has a standard of morality, which I totally respect, but this profane character in the play also has a standard of morality. So is there one morality that fits all? One that we seem to accept, like going back to the Ten Commandments, don't kill? That seems to be a pretty uniform morality.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we kill, don't we? We have state-sponsored executions, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to morality?
Mm-hmm.
Is morality a fixed thing? And so if morality is not even a fixed thing, belief is even less a fixed thing. And these are the what I tell my five actors in this play is that you are wrestling with the angels, and you are on behalf of the audience tussling with these ideas to bring them out as questions without definitive answers. And I just hope that there are shouting arguments in the parking lot and embracing hugs going on all at the same time.
In case you're joining us, the program is Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. My guest is Mark Hollick, who is the a playwright and director of What the Jews Believe, which will be at the Unicorn Theater, Berkshire Theater Group, from September 26th through October 20th. You talked in a pretty profound way about the influence on your life of your father, and you wrote this play that was originally titled What the Jews Believe, and mm-hmm. then retitled The Legacy, and now retitled again
Back to
What
the
Jews
original.
Believe. Was he your muse in writing it?
Yes, not consciously, but in I have two plays that both are debased. Isn't that interesting that I said that? Both are based directly on my childhood. And it involves the two heroes of my life. One was my father, and the other was my father's father. And so when I was growing up in our little town, we were the only Jewish family, and we were a three-generation household. So I lived with my Russian, Jewish, Yiddish-speaking grandparents, and I lived also with my parents. And in one house, you could see the three steps of immigrant assimilation into American life.
This is sounding like a really, and I mean this with all due respect, this sounds like a really homegrown grassroots version of the Lehman Trilogy.
Yes.
Yeah.
A writer observes the passage of time, and our primary instinct is to keep things as they are. And the old maxim, the only thing that doesn't change is change. And so people contend with the passage of time. And what writers observe is people's struggle with that passage of time, getting older, going from one generation to another, moving from one phase of your life to another, tussling from with another person who is at a different stage in life or development. And so this, what I saw very vividly in my house growing up was this massive flow of time, because I was living with, when I was a kid, I was living with a man who was born in the 19th century and came from an essentially medieval world of the Jewish shtetl. Here we are recording on this magnificent miniature stereo equipment, and we've had to turn off all our digital devices so the signals don't get mixed up. We're in a different universe.
We are, yeah.
And yet we continue to be humans with this same structure of belief and morality. And what is changing? What are we letting go of?
All right, speaking of a different universe, our culture, our political culture, our social culture is in a different place than it was 20 years ago when you wrote this play.
Yeah.
And we've talked about whether your play, What the Jews Believe, invites the discussion of what is morality. Is it different from belief?
Yeah.
Do you think your play, because we're in an age where, a state of social anomaly, where the protocols are disappearing, where the rules don't seem as relevant as they are anymore, do you think your play is more relevant?
If I can take a step back just from the play, the theater itself is an arena of compassion. It's a place we go to see how other people think and feel. And the only reason we would do that, unless it's to hear someone sing a song or watch someone perform a pratfall or a magic trick, the only reason we're in there is because we have some basic urge to open our hearts to somebody else's way of thinking, to somebody else's life, to something that they have gone through. I know. Look around. We're looking at a time where compassion is in short supply. Mm-hmm. And that's a muscle that needs to be exercised.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will truly atrophy.
Mm-hmm.
And we will gather into small camps and shoot arrows and throw rocks at each other.
Well, we're sort of doing that.
We are.
Yeah.
We are. So what people encounter in this play is what is it that truly separates us? And is there some bedrock foundation by which we can live together in a state of disagreement or in a state of not knowing exactly where everybody stands morally without condemnation? So this play doesn't direct the political nature of the times, and yet it nests firmly in the realm of compassion,
mm-hmm.
of walking into the theater, opening a book, looking at a work of art, and seeing if you can open your heart to somebody that thinks differently than you do.
Final question. You've written two plays about your family background, mm-hmm. the immigrant, mm-hmm. and now what Jews believe.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in a small town in rural Texas, mm-hmm. as the mm-hmm. only Jewish family.
Right.
Can you go home again?
I do go home, and it's not there. Home to me is my childhood, and childhood is where everyone's nostalgia resides. Nostalgia is the perfect world that you grew up in. You know, you look at pictures of groups of Syrian refugees. Mm-hmm. What are the children doing? They're playing. Mm-hmm. You go back to any time when you were 3, 4, 5, 8 years old. What were we doing then? We were playing. I have intense nostalgia for my hometown as the place where I grew up. I go back there in my dreams. To me, it's a perfect world. I know it's nostalgia. I know I will never achieve it. I know that those of us who look back on the good war as the good war are just reaching back through a nostalgic haze. It's childhood is unrecoverable. Nostalgia can't be lived in. It's the great, as aware beings, that's the sorrow that we carry forward in our lives. Mm. The life is an accumulation of losses, and longing for home is maybe the biggest one of those.
And I have a sense that's all in what the Jews believe.
It is.
Mark Hollick, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Joining me on Off Script.
I enjoyed talking.
And for those who have listened to the program and want to see the play, The Unicorn Theater, What the Jews Believe, playwright and directed by Mark Hollick from September 26th through October 20th. Thanks for joining us on Off Script. Until you join us again, be well.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare, collectible, and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th-century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.